There is a war on free speech across the globe. The ability to speak your mind freely is under attack. Across the globe, from China to New Zealand, and yes, even in the land of the free, the United States. There's a battle over having your own opinion. Big tech is partnering with big government to silence those who do not toe the party line. I am Sky Nell Hughes, and on today's show, we are going to give you the 360 view on the status of free speech around the globe. Let's get started. Did you know the United Nations Universal Declaration of Human Rights, formally granted by the laws of most nations, actually says freedom of speech is a right and should be preserved? Now, a Pew survey from countries around the globe showed those countries in the Western Hemisphere were actually more tolerant than countries in the Eastern Hemisphere. But there is a big difference between tolerance and the ability to act and say without any repercussions from the government. This could mean as an individual or as an entity. But the government is not the only one to fear, as mob rule and public opinion have become just as damning and even dangerous. Sadly, often manipulating the truth to fit a narrative being pushed by the elites, who often turn out to be powerful in the government as well. But it's the manipulation of the truth peddled, which is what many governments are using to justify the restrictions on speech today. So what really is free anymore? Joining us now for more on this topic is Mila Gorayev. She is a law student at the University of British Columbia, as well as a journalist and podcast host. Thanks for joining us, Mila. You know, the attacks on freedom of speech are happening globally. Just recently, New Zealand's Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern gave a speech at the UN calling for greater regulation of freedom of speech, even referring at one point to certain forms of speech as weapons of war. What about that? Can free speech actually be a weapon of war? And even if it is, do we have a right to regulate and censor it? And who exactly has that right? The government?
Well, yeah, I found that to be a bit ironic with the use of the term war, because what seems to happen instead is that when there's critics of war or critics of certain policies in the war, it's not the speech that's necessarily the weapon of violence here. The violence is punishing that speech or punishing the speech of critics of war. And you see, even for instance, somebody might propose, like Elon Musk makes this peace proposal on Twitter, and suddenly, you know, he gets dragged through the mud, and you know, people are calling him an agent of the Russian government, et cetera, et cetera. And this again is not necessarily punishing his free speech. He's still free to go about and say what he wants, but it is trying to send messages to people who don't have the same kind of power as him, that they will be smeared, that their livelihoods will be impacted if they dissent from the, whether it's the government's or just people in power's views on a mainstream issue like this. And so it's funny because like the restricting of speech in the name of, say, stopping violence is always in service of these very violent policies abroad, such as arming these extremist militias.
Now, there have been critics of China who say that in the world's most populated country, freedom of speech is a privilege and not a right. How do you view freedom of speech in China and in other non-Western countries around the globe? Are people there facing the same challenges?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because, for instance, as far as I know, I think they have tighter laws on things like pornography. And it also kind of makes you ask, what are the bounds of free speech in general? Does pornography count as free speech, or is that a censorious action? And that is done in the name of the good of the citizens as well. But the problem with these things, like with China, is it's genuinely difficult to know what the truth is in these countries, if they're, say, an enemy country or a country that we want to undermine. The more unfree that we portray them, the more justification foreign policy elites find in trying to intervene in these countries. And so it's very hard to know what's true. I'll be told one day that, you know, someone on China can't access any Western social media, and then I'll talk to a friend in China on Instagram without any issues. And so I think it's very hard to discern what's true and what's not. But I definitely support anyone there that, you know, feels like they're constricted and thinks that the free speech laws need reform.
Now, it seems clear that there are many countries in the world where freedom of speech is, to say the least, a divisive issue. But is the West a hypocrite in this regard? I mean, we see constant call-outs by our media and government about the violations in other countries, especially nations with differing foreign policy goals to the United States. But we see little condemnation, for instance, of Saudi Arabia or Israel and their violations. And what about how people are banned off of the internet practically in the West for opposing the regime's narrative?
Absolutely. And I think that's the power, you know, that these that our countries have is to say, you know, I know that, you know, this is hypocritical and I'm still going to enforce this. I don't think that the U.S. government expects us to reasonably believe that Saudi Arabia is freer than Iran, but it only demonizes one of the two. And so basically, it's just a very easy phrase to use as a bludgeon, just as good governance used to be used as an excuse to interfere with the sovereignty of another country, rather than, you know, being concerned with whether or not we're governing ourselves well at home.
In your view, what are the limits of free speech, or are there any?
Yeah, I think that there are some forms of content that don't need protection from free speech laws. So for instance, child pornography or just any kind of, say, violent, non-consensual pornography, I think is fair game to crack down on. So for instance, there was a big crackdown on Pornhub recently for publishing content that was non-consensual. So I think anything that's illegal or extremely violent, you know, just stuff like that, I think is fair game. But I do recognize that it is hard to draw the line there, right? And I think this is something that people have been debating for a really long time. And I wish there was an easier sort of answer or easier way to draw the line. But I think in general, we can say that illegal things that are illegal for good reason, like something like child pornography, or say like an ISIS, one of those ISIS gratuitous violence videos, I think those might be fair game.
How do you see the future of freedom of speech? Who is going to win out in the long and the short term? Those who want to limit freedom of speech or those who want to expand the horizons of what we can say and where we can exactly say it?
Yeah, and I don't want to end on a pessimistic note, but I do have to say that what's happening and knowing that what's happening is a problem is just not enough, because the power that the censors have is to say, we know that you know it's ridiculous for us to silence you for this, and that's how powerful we are. We can silence you over something that is ridiculous, and we can enforce a narrative and get you to repeat a narrative that is ridiculous. And so that to me seems to be the biggest issue. They want, that for me is a huge problem, in that also the enforcers are not just the government. The enforcers will be employers. The enforcers will be, you know, ability to access social media accounts, ability to access payment from PayPal or whatever. And so it really, the ways that one can be censored are so vast now that it's just not going in a good direction.
Thank you, Mila Garayab. Stick around, please. And for our viewers, stay tuned, because we are going to be right back with our guest discussing the attack on freedom of speech around the world here on the 360 View. We'll be back after the break.
The discovery of the New World at the end of the 15th century, there appeared Atlantic slave trade. The slave traders from European countries started building forts on the western coast of the African continent to transport the African inhabitants to America, to be forced into hard labor. Until the middle of the 17th century, Portugal had played the main role in this atrocious business. Then Great Britain, France, and the Netherlands took the leadership. For the span of 400 years of legal and illegal slave trade, about 17 million people were forcefully shipped across the Atlantic, not including those who died on the way due to unbearable living conditions. Modern historians estimate that for each slave shipped to America, there were five who died while captured, during transportation, and cruel obliteration of rebellion. This ruthless people trade practiced by the leading European countries took away tens of millions of African lives. The Organization of United Nations classifies the transatlantic slave trade as one of the gravest human rights abuses in the history of humanity. This is the biggest act of deportation of people ever seen by mankind.
Is your media a reflection of reality? In a world transformed, what will make you feel safer? Isolation or community? Are you going the right way or are you being led somewhere? Which direction? What is truth? What is fake? In a world corrupted, you need to descend. So join us in the depths, or remain in the shallows.
Welcome back. This is the 360 View. We are here discussing the threats to freedom of speech around the globe with journalist, podcaster, and law student at the University of British Columbia, Mila Gorayev. Mila, let's go back to basics with some definitions. What exactly is free speech, and is it a basic human right?
So free speech is enshrined as a right in a lot of countries, and I think there's a good reason for that. So in Canada and the US, for instance, we have assurances in your constitution and our charter that gives us sort of promise certainty where we can speak freely without legal sanction. And I think that's something important to guarantee to our citizens. But I don't think that the right to free speech is simply a negative right against governments. So day to day, the power that most people encounter is not the power of the government. It's the power that of their livelihoods through people like employers, just through the market and their colleagues. So to me, genuine free speech is not simply this right that you hold against the government. It's the protection against all sources of power in your life, where an opinion is not going to cost you your livelihood. And this is not fully enshrined in our country's laws. We have some protection. So for instance, you can't get fired based on the religion you practice, but unfortunately people still do get fired for speech that they do outside of the workplace. And so in that sense, free speech is not really fully enshrined, or we're not fully protected from all sources of power that can interfere with our speech.
Now, why do you think freedom of speech is so important for a functioning democracy or a functioning society in general?
So, if my previous point about free speech impacting livelihoods is correct, then what makes it important is that it gives us insights into multiple perspectives from various corners of society. So in an environment where, for instance, we can get fired for our views, we end up only having a few people that are able to truly speak freely. So these are people, for instance, with higher job security, likely from more privileged classes with less precarious incomes. So for instance, a tenured professor is going to have a lot more freedom than an average worker to speak their mind. And so this makes it so that we only hear perspectives from elite levels of society. And we get a skewed perception of what people want and how they feel about certain issues and levels of general discontent. We saw this happen in the US 2016 election, for instance, where everybody thought Hillary Clinton was going to win based on polling and based on how people were speaking about the election, but you just didn't hear voices from all levels of society. So I think it is genuinely a big issue for democracy is to be able to let everybody speak freely if they wish.
Now, in the West, we do hear a lot about freedom of speech and attacks on it. Let's look at the United States first and foremost. The concept is actually enshrined in their Constitution. How do you view freedom of speech in the United States compared with the rest of the world? Is the United States better or worse off? And where is that trending, in your opinion?
Yeah, so as a Canadian law student, I would have previously said that the United States is quite impressive in terms of free speech protections, especially, for instance, it was way more difficult to sue for defamation in the US. So it was harder to, say, silence people via the courts using defamation law. However, there's been two cases in the US recently that seem to kind of have loosened that. So there was Alex Jones recently had to pay, I think, almost $1 billion. And Amber Heard as well had to pay quite a bit of money in damages, more in damages than I've ever seen in a Canadian defamation case. And so whatever you think of either of those people, because free speech, again, is not really, it's not about protecting people that you like per se, right? But whatever you think of either of them, I found that quite surprising in terms of the outcomes. I think both the US and Canada are not going in great directions as far as free speech is concerned. And not just because of these defamation cases, but because there are more and more entities that are able to silence speech. So we don't just have the government saying, I'm going to imprison you for hate speech, or I'm going to charge you for this. We're loosening defamation laws. Tech companies have a control over your participation in the virtual public square because there's a huge social media monopoly. So if you're banned off Twitter and YouTube, and all these major sites, your voice is not really being heard. And it doesn't matter that the government's not going to arrest you for that. So the government now is only one among many potential threats. And that to me seems to be like a more worrying direction.
Now, back in 2020, as a presidential candidate, the former Vice President Joe Biden actually said he would revoke Section 230 protections and hold social media sites liable for their content. In the past couple years, we have seen a lot of political pressure on Facebook and other social media sites, all to monitor their content. And we have even seen, quote unquote, whistleblowers come out against Facebook and other social media sites detailing the spread of, quote, misinformation and the harmful effects of social media. Now, we can all agree that social media can be detrimental to your mental and emotional well-being, but is that what the government cares about? Or is this just really a push to have greater control over free speech on social media?
Yeah, I think this is a very disturbing trend. And to be charitable, I think that, you know, some people in government might think they're genuinely doing a good thing and saving people from misinformation, but others probably know that transforming social media companies from a mere conduit to a publisher is dangerous. And companies obviously also want to avoid as much liability as possible. So this is just going to create and encourage more censorious behavior, and not necessarily in favor of truth, just in favor of who is going to challenge the liability or make the companies more likely to experience liability. And so none of this, I really think, is out of a concern for emotional or mental well-being, unfortunately. I do think that it is very disturbing and something that needs to be pushed back against.
How do you see this trend developing? Will we see even more pressure on social media? Will the government actually win out and be able to regulate what is allowed and what is not allowed in terms of speech on social media? And I want to go a step further. How can the companies resist? And do they even want to resist? But if it's the companies, what about the individuals? How can they resist speech policing on social media?
Yeah, and I'm not even sure that the winner is just the government in so much as it is the powerful people who benefit from the prevailing consensus and the consensus that's being enforced through the censors. So this definitely includes governments, but it also includes those who financially pressure and benefit from certain government endeavors. We see this a lot with foreign policy, and especially RT can definitely attest to this. The censorship of foreign policy critics services the government, but not all the profiteers from this are the American government. There's also, you know, weapons manufacturers who want us to continue preparing for war or potential war. And so I'm not convinced that companies want to resist either, unfortunately, as long as it's impacting their profits. I think they'll use these to make it seem like it's a righteous crusade. If PayPal is, say, banning someone for criticizing NATO and calling them a Putin asset, then they're thinking, oh, we're fighting this holy war against Putin. And so I think it incentivizes companies instead to signal their virtue rather than them necessarily just being at the mercy of a government who's telling them who to censor.
You know, former President Barack Obama has also recently said that freedom of speech does not apply to social media companies. Is he right?
I wasn't even sure what he meant by it, to be honest, but what I think censors want to do is to transform the idea of social media as a conduit or transmitter of speech into a publisher. And then this way they can be punished simply for allowing controversial speech. So for instance, Twitter could potentially be held liable for defamation if somebody defames somebody on Twitter. And so if President Obama wants to take away those protections, or just the idea that these media companies are not are social media, are just simple conduits, then that's going to have long-reaching consequences, and it's not going to be beneficial for the average person.
Thank you, Mila Goraev. Now, if you are living in a country which says you have freedom of speech, but there is an active debate on what freedom of speech is in present day, you most likely have already lost pieces of it. Now, earlier this year, the CEO of PayPal said, the difficult part is identifying what is hatred and what is freedom of speech. I think just as important of a question is who gets to be the one who determines this, and what is the universal standard? The unpopular but brutally honest truth is, there isn't one and never has been. This hasn't changed. What has changed, however, is standards in society and the ability to spread thoughts and information. Both can be very damning. It's very scary to me when a person in government tries to limit the speech of anyone, especially their opposition, both behind the scenes and in public. Only the most brazen would tell the people to their face they don't believe their opinion should be expressed, and they don't want others to hear it. Rather, the label of misinformation is slapped on, thus deeming the information and the person speaking it worthy of ridicule and dismissal. However, the best way to rid misinformation is the truth, and should be every individual's responsibility to counter. Well, that's if you still have the freedom to do so. I'm Skynell Hughes for the 360 View with the news you need to hear. Thanks for watching.